We have a big episode today, and we're going to get right into it with our special guest shortly. But before we do, I'm going to tee it up.
Okay.
I saw something on Instagram this morning that I sent over to George.
Okay.
Before he posts it, the top five most profitable casinos.
In anywhere?
Anywhere.
Does gaming, does the tribal casinos count? They don't have to report.
Everything counts.
Like Foxwoods and
what
Verona.
Would you do you have any idea what would be number? Do you think you could name one? How many do you think you could name on the top five?
Probably a lot of them. It's got to be the California. If you're counting the tribal casinos.
I think I'm counting California casinos
like Verona and Pala, Hard Rock, Florida. Hard Rock's Florida. Macau's number one, probably.
Yeah, Bill.
No, I would think
George
Macau.
Has it right here.
Oh, okay, what is that? I can't see it.
Venetian and Macau, number one.
Yeah.
Marina Bay Sands. Number two.
Macau?
Yeah, well, that's in Singapore.
Singapore.
Okay. Which is supposed to be beautiful. My dad performed there, so
oh,
it was
wow.
amazing. Aria and Aria. Bellagio, 3 and 4. Would you have thought that?
No.
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 I wouldn't have
that's
thought that.
Weird.
Yeah. I was actually surprised by this list. I knew Macau was going to be top two. I didn't know.
This is gambling wise, money.
Profit.
This is profit. This is
world's
is this
most profitable casino.
Gaming revenue also?
Oh, good question.
You know, because then you got to go by some other places.
I'm not sure because it just
who's
says four, most profitable.
Who's five? Who's six?
Four is Bellagio. Five is MGM National Harbor.
That's
in
is
Maryland.
That Baltimore?
I don't. I just saw it on Instagram. Joe, I don't know where it comes
boardroom.
From. Who knows
at,
if it's right?
At the boardroom.
I don't know if it's right.
Okay.
Yeah, but that it's. Anyway, yeah. So we but very good. We have a great show today because
yeah.
we have a great guest. One of our guys. I've been trying to get on the show, and guys. Also, I haven't been saying this. Because I'm not good at like self-promotion.
Yeah.
We have to make sure you guys please do us a favor and like and subscribe. That depends how long we'll be on air.
Yeah. And also, if you could give us a review on Spotify specifically.
Oh, really?
If you could rate us on Spotify and give us
we
a review.
We have some great comments, though.
That'd be great. We never talk like that, though. We don't ever ask people to do anything.
Most people are really, really nice.
Yeah.
There's a couple internet tough guys under anonymity, of course.
We actually pre-taped the guest a few moments ago.
Yes.
And so we're going to cut to your intro of him right now and enjoy.
John, really excited for our next guest.
Yes.
I mean, we have had on such giant guests. He doesn't even know the people we've had on the show. We've had on so many football players.
Yeah.
Derek Stevens has been on many times, owner of the Circa. But this is the guy that I've been looking to get for a while.
Me too, because I need help. Yeah.
So let's introduce our great guest here, Professor I. Nelson Rose. 1979 Harvard grad. Is that do I hear that right?
Harvard Law
Professor
School,
Emeritus Whittier School, Whittier College, visiting professor for University of Macau. They have so many different accolades. we'll spend the whole show getting into them. I've known of you for almost 30 years, and I was so happy when you responded to my email and you actually knew who I was. I was even happier about that. But we have so many questions because people ask us questions, and we have questions on gaming. So I'm going to start out with John because the number one that all of our people – John got no internet fights on Instagram about this question. We're hoping you can answer this one.
I have been in an Instagram battle because someone said – we were talking on the show a few weeks ago. If you play blackjack and you win $500, are you supposed to be paying taxes on that?
So according to the Internal Revenue Code and the IRS, you are supposed to report every penny you receive anywhere, at any time, anywhere in the world. They even have to put in, okay, birthday presents, there's an exclusion, unless it's a bribe. I mean, literally, you're supposed to report everything. Having said that, the IRS isn't stupid, and so they know people aren't going to report it. That's why when you win large amounts, you get a form from the racetrack or the casino, and a copy goes to the IRS. So that, obviously, you're supposed to report it, but you got to report it because the one thing the IRS is good at is connecting computers.
Right.
So I'm a lawyer, professor of law. I can never tell you to do anything illegal, but if you win $500 at blackjack, the chances of you getting caught if you don't report it are about the same as winning the World Series of Poker.
Wow, and John's going to win that this year.
Which, oddly enough, I am going to win that
he
this
says he's
year.
He's going to win it
this
year.
So I will. Well, then, I'm going to start reporting the $500 winnings.
Oh. And that one, I have got a couple of professional poker players who the IRS started reading the casino, the gambling press, and they started finding out who the big winners were and started bugging them. Wow. Hey, we know you won the World Series of Poker. And so actually the IRS changed its own regulations a few years ago and is now requiring the casinos to give tournament operators W-2Gs, the form that says, hey, you're a big winner. And now both we and the IRS know it.
But not how about in cash games, though? Wouldn't that be impossible? They don't know who wins. You're supposed to do it upon yourself, correct?
You are always supposed to do it upon yourself, right? I mean, well, you know, there was a big kerfuffle some years back about waiters and waitresses reporting tips.
Very good. Yep.
Remember that?
Yes.
And so the IRS said, okay, we are simply going to estimate what your tips are. You know,
yep.
Now, if you keep perfect records, you can beat the IRS, but it's expensive. I mean, you may end up having to go to court, but there are people who have perfect records of their gambling sessions. And now the reason it's important, I saw one of the questions you sent me is taking gambling losses off your taxes.
Yeah,
you can take any gambling loss, including illegal bets, and even if you're an operator, you can take illegal gambling off of your reported winnings. Like if you win the state lottery, that's going to get reported. But if you lost money in a cash game and you had perfect records, you can take that off. Even contests are considered.
That was my question.
Contests are considered a form of gambling. So you can take losses from one form of gambling off your taxes for winnings of another form.
Okay.
In fact, you know, I've been writing my column "Gambling in the Law."
It's fantastic
for many years, and one of the most interesting cases I wrote about was an accountant who went to the racetrack, and there's other people who do this. They sweep up the losing bets.
Yep, I've seen
at the racetrack,
do it.
And you can buy those to show, hey, yeah, I won the state lottery, but look at all the money I lost betting on races. Again, the IRS is not stupid. They look for things. Well, there's footprints on it, you know, and you've got bets from different tracks in different parts of the country on the exact same day.
Sure.
You know, interesting. The accountant went to jail, but his customers is, you know, they didn't know that he was actually cheating on their behalf. But the easiest way to do it is just keep good records.
So just keep good records on paper, you mean, right? Wins and losses down, dates you
absolutely.
Win.
Absolutely.
And the same thing that I heard with the racetracks, too. You need I was told this, you're going to answer it, because another question spontaneously here. Don't you have to have the program from the racetrack that day with the tickets, or do you could just show them tickets you found in a garbage can?
I've never heard. No, it's not a requirement.
Right, okay.
You need to have a diary.
Gotcha.
Right.
A good diary.
Now, when I say the IRS isn't stupid, sometimes they're stupid. Like they, and this is a stupid rule they came out with. They literally expect you to, or want you to, report every bet and every loss. Oh. Imagine playing poker where you had to do
it's
that.
Impossible.
That's it. That is insane.
Right.
So the general consensus is, no, look, as long as you're sensible, you keep track of the sessions. Trips to Las Vegas, for example, Interestingly, I just was checking this a few days ago for a client, and they actually, according to the IRS, you can take off your expenses on trips to
Las
Vegas.
I was going to ask.
Oh, wow.
That's literally what I was just going to ask you.
Yeah. The interesting thing is I think that's wrong. The only way you can take off your expenses is if you are in what is called the business or profession of gambling.
Right.
Meaning, basically, you don't have to show a winning. You just have to show you really spend a lot of time. 7 hours a day, you're in the business or profession of gambling. And then you can take off all your expenses as well as your losses. But according to the IRS form, it dealt with sharing winnings with other people. They say you can take off your expenses. So if the IRS itself is saying you can take off your expenses for trips to Las Vegas, then I guess you can.
Okay, what about this? This is kind of new territory. There's a lot of people that are, you know, they're actively posting on Instagram, on YouTube, they live stream when they're gambling. Can those guys that are doing that claim that when they lose, it's a marketing expense? Okay, so let's take like our show Wisecracks or Action Junkies, yeah, the show I do, right? So could I make an argument that I play in poker tournaments and that's a marketing expense to market my podcast? And could I write off the entry fees of those poker tournaments claiming that it's marketing?
Well, there's two separate rules. One is you have to report all your winnings.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All of them. You are allowed to deduct any losses that year from any form of gambling off your winnings up to the amount that you've won. So if you win the state lottery and you won $100,000, you can report up to $100,000 in losses. If you are in the business or profession of gambling, or for your guys' related businesses or professions, you can take your additional expenses, your marketing expenses, above the $100,000. Mm. I went to Tahiti for vacation. No, it turned into a business trip because I wrote about the Tahiti lottery. I wrote about it was a Club Med, and they had a casino night, which I figured out how to beat because their roulette wheel was biased. And I couldn't have written about it if I hadn't gone to Tahiti. So I took the airfare off as a business expense.
What year was that that you did that with the biased roulette wheel? Ballpark.
Wow. That would have been probably 40 years ago.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Because we talked about that recently.
Yeah.
Billy Walters, you know, beat Steve Wynn in Atlantic City at Golden Nugget on a biased roulette wheel. And, you know, he gave him his winnings, but he didn't give him his $1 million deposit back. And
he did not. See, that's interesting because I'm in a fight with some of the operators on behalf of bettors now, where the big thing is sports betting has exploded so much.
Oh, yeah.
That advantage players have figured out how to take advantage of the promotions and, you know, everything else. But there's sometimes limits in states, or they're living in a state where it's not legal. You know, the whole thing about
that's one of my questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they got over friends, state lines. Yeah.
Right. So they got friends in other states.
Right.
And operators are seizing the deposits and the winnings. I've worked for operators also, but I really do think they should give back the deposits.
Right.
Okay, they don't have to give back the winnings because it violates the terms and conditions. But it just seems really, it's not only unfair, it seems to me to be like a form of theft. You know about Black Friday, right?
Yes.
Yep.
When, okay, the U.S. government seized not only the web names, the site names for the internet poker operators, they seized all the players' money. And one of the big operators, it turns out, they had been taking the player deposits for poker and distributing as if they were profits to the members of the board, the owners, right?
Yep.
And that was why they didn't have the money to give the players back their money. To me, that's a form of theft. You're supposed to take players' deposits, put them in a separate account that you can't touch, and all right, if they do something else, you're not going to give them back their winnings, but you have to give them back the deposits. But it's a fight that's going on right now.
Thank God that another big company came in and rescued them, and people got their money back. But if it wasn't for that, they would have had their money stolen.
First of all, yeah, but it took years.
Years.
And there I know some big poker players who didn't ask for their money back because they had to go through the federal government to get their money back, and they didn't want the federal government to have their name. So Nelson, as a big winner.
So Nelson, what you're saying is, because this is new to me, new territory too, you're working on behalf of some of the players that went ahead and said, "Hey, can you bet on DraftKings or FanDuel, BetMGM, whatever for me? We don't have it in the state. You have it in your state. Can you bet $500 on something for me?" And somehow them finding out it was not for them, and they're freezing the money. Is that what you're saying? Correct.
I've got more than a dozen advantage sports bettors and others.
Sure.
I mean, there's some interesting other developments like the sweepstakes casinos and the, remember this only came in May of 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court knocked out the federal Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. And then the states were free to legalize sports betting. 35 states legalized sports betting in the last 5 years. And some of the operators really don't know what they're doing. My favorite was an in-game parlay where, and I can't remember what it was. It was like, I don't know, something had to happen, and a triple and a home run. But a triple was defined as a player stepping on third base. And my clients said, "Hey, if you got a home run, you got a triple." And they
wow, what a move.
And their big question to me was, okay, and I don't remember the numbers at all, but let's say if we bet $5,000, we win $25,000. If we bet $50,000, we win $250,000. And I said, if you win $250,000, the operator is going to say, "Hey, it's an obvious mistake. And we have a rule that we don't have to pay bets where we, the operator, made an obvious mistake." So they said, "All right." And they went for $5,000. They got $25,000, and that in-game parlay disappeared, right? Well, there are so many opportunities like that, and people just have friends and family in other states, besides some restrictions on whether you have to actually go to the sports book to open an account, things like that, right? And so I have clients not only in the United States, I've got some from other countries who want to know, can they do this? Can they work with friends and family in other states and basically make the same bet, but other people are sharing in it? Or, you know,
Yeah.
People call us all the time. Hey, can you bet $100 on the Yankees for me to win the World Series? They call
exactly.
They call from New Jersey. That's one of my questions. Gambling over state lines. Is it illegal for me to put a $100 bet in for a buddy of mine that wants $100 on the Yankees? He's calling me over a state line. Maybe it's this 1961 wire. I don't know if it's the wire rack. I don't know. Like, what is the line there?
I am actually working on this and have advised a lot of players who have figured out some of the operators don't know what they're doing. And actually I have to take a side note. My favorite example was there is an internet casino that is offering a 25% bonus for making a deposit. So you put in $100, you get $125 worth of chips.
Yep.
And one of my clients says, I'm just playing basic blackjack because you have to run through the chips once, right? So he sits there playing basic blackjack, loses 3%, cashes it out. So he just made, $20 off of $100, and then they let him redo it. Again and again and again. I mean, that is an operator who doesn't know what he's doing, right?
Wow.
With sports betting, and most of my clients are sports bettors. It is complicated. First of all, the terms and conditions usually say you can't do anything like this. And if the terms and conditions are written well, you really can't. And the guys who get caught are making literally the exact same bets on, the exact same matches in different states. But a lot of the companies are owned, you mentioned DraftKings and FanDuel. Their computers are all comparing the bets. But even if they're operating under a different name, they may be owned by the same company. You also can't, this has been forbidden for decades. You can't bet $1,000 on pass and $1,000 on don't pass just to get the promotion. I mean, that's the way drug runners used to wash money. Cash, right? So you got to be a little smart in what the bets you make. It violates the terms and conditions, probably. That's not a crime, okay? But it does give the operator the right to seize your money, including your deposits. And I always tell my clients, don't put all your eggs in one basket. It could be the government, it could be PayPal, it could be anybody who seizes the money. Maybe you'll get it back, maybe you won't, okay? So you don't sit there with a big deposit in even the best licensed sports book. They have the right to seize the money. The big question, of course, is it criminal? All of the federal laws, and those are the ones you really have to worry about, all of the federal laws were designed to go after organized crime. So all of the federal laws start with, if you are in the business of illegal gambling, you're not in the business of illegal gambling, okay? Except, unfortunately, the Wire Act. And there's a lottery statute, but you don't care about that. The Wire Act says if you are in the business of gambling. So the question is, are you in the business of gambling if you are a big bettor? And by the way, we mentioned the taxes. You could be in the business of gambling for tax purposes, but not in the business of gambling for the Wire Act. I haven't seen it come up, but you can do that.
That's interesting.
So are you in the business of gambling? Every court that has ever looked at this, except for one judge in Utah, has said, and some prosecutors in New York City, has said, to be in the business of gambling, you have to hold yourself out to the public. You have to accept bets. It's not to go after bettors. It's only to go after bookies.
That's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Very good. Very good. Like the Southern District is one that you were there. It's like going after everybody.
Yeah, and even the one in New York, the guys, I was involved in that case, and yeah, they were probably in the business of gambling. You can't help the guys collect money or anything. I mean, you're just a bettor.
Right.
Even if you are really organized, like you should be, keep good records, you've got friends in other states, you should not be in the business of gambling. You shouldn't be violating the Wire Act.
Right.
The second part of the Wire Act, which is still a little bit of a controversy, is does it apply to non-sports betting? And under the Obama administration, they said only sports betting. So the Wire Act doesn't apply to poker, internet poker, doesn't apply to anything else. The Trump administration, with political pressure from Sheldon Adelson, who owned the Las Vegas Sands and hated internet gambling, he got the attorney general to change it to say, you can't use a computer with gambling. I mean, ridiculous decision. That is still on the books.
Wow.
But the state lotteries got panicked. The racetracks got panicked. And the courts have said, no, the Wire Act is only sports betting. And even the Department of Justice says, yeah, the Wire Act is only sports betting. It's still a decision. Eventually, I think the Biden administration will get rid of it, but it's still out there. So if you're doing anything except sports betting, and you're doing it particularly if you're just a bettor, you shouldn't fall under the Wire Act. For sports betting, well, that does fall under the Wire Act, except you got to be in the business of gambling.
Right.
So,
and question is, the Wire Act, is that only like a literal bank wire, or does like Venmo count as a wire?
The Wire Act was passed in 1961 by Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother. He was the attorney general. He said he wanted to go after organized crime. We have to cut the wire. Turns out, 1961, the wire was a telegraph wire that went to illegal sports and race books so that they could get the results before the bettors. You remember the movie The Sting?
Sure.
If the bettors know the results before the sports book or the race book, the sports or race book goes out of business. So it was designed to cut the wire. It wasn't even clear it covered telephones.
Wow.
Let alone anything else. I've got guys, I am actually investigating individual states right now to see if they have the anti-courier law, the proxy betting laws, to see if there, if there is even an argument that they might be violating some state law, and then are they big enough that they would fall under the Illegal Gambling Businesses Act federal? And the federal is the one you got to worry about, because they can reach anywhere. Well, they can seize your money. They can charge you with money laundering.
Sure.
With racketeering.
Right. Nelson, did you have something right now?
I have too much. Okay. I have part two of another
Nelson, let me ask you this. I want to go back to me winning the World Series of Poker main event this year.
Yes, I will be betting on
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there a benefit? Is there any world where there's a benefit to me filing as a professional gambler, hypothetically, if I did win the main event, for a tax break versus just winning the main event and filing as a normal person? I'm not using the right terminology, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, remember, the rule is that you can take losses off your winnings. So you should be keeping a diary, a book from the beginning of the year. You know, if you win the World Series of Pokers in the middle of the year, well, but let's say you win the state lottery in December.
Yep.
Want to be able to say, hey, yeah, but I lost all these bets. Leading up to that.
Right.
So you can take the losses off. I personally think that you can't take expenses off unless you're in the trader business of gambling.
Got
it. Now, as I said, there's an IRS instruction. I think it's for Form 5754, which is if two people are sharing winnings. I can't remember, but I found an IRS instructions that actually said you can take off your expenses, and they say expenses of going to Las Vegas. I don't know why they're saying that without being in the trader business. If you are in the trader business of gambling, you can take all your expenses off, anything that is business related.
Yep.
And the case that established this, it's an interesting case. Many, many years ago, there's a guy lost his job, decided he was going to become a professional track bettor. So spent a lot of time looking over the racing forms, going to the track. I think he was able to show he was putting in like 7 hours a day going betting on horses. At the end of the year, he lost money. So he didn't make any difference about reporting the winnings and the losses, right? He lost money, but he wanted to take all his other expenses off. Goes to the Supreme Court and says, if you're in the trader business of any trader business of gambling, you can take all your business-related expenses off. So, obviously what you guys are doing is you're in a trader business.
Right.
And you gave me the question. Entering tournaments, as long as it's really promotions for the show, that sounds like it could be argued, yeah, that's a business expense.
Huh. All right.
Remember that when I hit you up for some money, Bill.
I know a group that actually used you and consulted for you, and we're going to advertise your site at the end.
I have worked with, I've worked with a lot of these operators. I mean, I'm kind of the guy who invented the .net idea. Poker.com,
yep.
Poker.net. Poker.net is free play.
Teaching, right, yeah.
Okay, you can't put any money in a .net site. But they know that when people are typing it out, I did Party Poker was my client. Ruth Parasol,
sure,
who started Party Poker, uh-huh. Right? And they know that if you put in Party Poker, you're trying to type partypoker.net and it comes out as partypoker.com, you're now in a money site. Okay, but they're not advertising partypoker.com. They're advertising partypoker.net.
Right, the free site.
Now, I told them not to even have links, but they decided, you can start researching who the Pope is and end up in a kiddie porn site with links pretty easily, right? So they decided that they were going to put partypoker.com as an advertising pop-up link on partypoker.net, and they never got in trouble with that in the United States. So I still don't think it's a great idea, but now it turns out Australia has said you absolutely cannot do that. Almost absolutely. If you got a free site, but it's advertising and trying to get people to a pay gambling site, Australia has said you're advertising a gambling site. Mm-hmm. Turns out what the case was there absolutely was no justification for the free site, for the .net site, other than to link them to advertise the .gambling site. If they had had some other stream of income, they were advertising other stuff, maybe it would have turned out differently. In the United States, Canada looked at this, and I said, how would you ever pass a law outlawing free sites, right? Just because they advertise gambling sites. Well, Australia did, but in the U.S., and I think still in Canada, if it's really a free site, but it's got links to pay sites, well, the free site isn't violating the law.
Right.
I've also worked with radio stations that advertise operators overseas. What they do is very carefully not really advertise gambling.
Right.
Right.
Learn to play.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. My favorite, I actually have the videotape of this, that in the, in New Jersey, they were not allowed to advertise, to show gambling. So over broadcast media. So what they showed is a couple dancing through an empty casino. They're not showing gambling, right?
Yeah.
On the cable version, and this was the golden nugget back then, the cable version of the same, for the same advertisement, they showed people betting tens of thousands of dollars playing craps, because cable, they were allowed to advertise gambling, but over the air, they had to show people dancing through an empty casino. So, yeah, I like your learn to play.
Yeah. I have a question going back to the blackjack table games thing. You had mentioned a session. So is there specific verbiage that constitutes what a session is? Like, so if I sit down at a blackjack table and I win $200 and then I go to a roulette wheel and I out of session now?
Well, remember, the IRS doesn't believe in sessions.
Oh, okay, right.
Right? The IRS says...
A win is a win.
Yeah, a win is a... Yeah, you bet $20 and you won. Record that. And, and now you bet $20, you lost. Okay, record that. I mean, that... So the the session thing has developed independently of what the IRS has said. And I don't know. I don't think there's any court decisions or anything on it.
Right. So hard to track. I mean, because it would also take you, because the casino's not reporting it. So the only way they know is if you told them.
Yeah. The only, actually, you know where they do it? On high stakes slot machines.
Okay.
Where, right?
Sure.
You got those $500 sure. platinum coin slot machines. And you put in three and you win five, you just won $2,500. They will stop you and make you fill out a form.
Right.
Sure.
Okay. A hand pay. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's because slot machines, they can keep track of them. I would say that it's an interesting question. I think for taking losses off your income, you're probably okay on taking the entire trip as a session, but
okay.
It's safer. It would be safer to take out your, well, I think of still paper and pencil, take out your phone and say, okay, it's even better if you can say I was at this table or I was comped. So that there's records that way, right?
Yep.
I won $2,000 playing blackjack. Now just very quickly, time and date. And then I went to the roulette wheel and I stupidly lost my $2,000 betting on roulette. Time and date. Well, you've got records.
Yep.
And you would, you know, in my view, you've got records of the two sessions.
Yep.
I can't believe the IRS would ever say, okay, we want to know the individual bets. I mean, they say they right. do, but it's impossible.
Right. Okay.
My last, this is my last, my, probably my last question.
And then
here.
I got one more too.
All right. Okay. No problem. And I'm sorry. That's to keep okay. you so long.
Sorry, Nelson.
He's got places to go.
I enjoy this. It's a lot of
this
fun.
This is really good. Yeah.
So this happened to me. I know you can't see my phone, but I took a photo of this at the casino cage in California. Every single window had this sign, this jackpot policy up on a placard. A friendly reminder about playing slots using someone else's card or going partners with someone.
Oh.
Any jackpot won by a guest using another person's card, capital letters, will not be paid. This includes the cards of spouses, relatives, and other close friends. So I was like, well, doesn't it matter who's playing the machine? They get the tax form. This just happened to me. There's a big promotion here in town. I sat down with a buddy of mine. I was playing under his card with him. He's sitting next to me, and we hit $1,200. And they came over to me and said, listen, we're going to pay you, but we frown on this because we'll take your slot privileges away here if you use someone else's card. This is like, how about if I'm with my wife and I'm letting her play? According to this casino in California, if you're with your wife and you're playing under her card, she's playing under your card, they are not paying you. So,
yes.
What's the legal laws about that? Or does it matter because it's tribal council or game, you know?
Well, they
can do what they want. Or yeah.
Well, but they have their own laws, too.
Okay.
The only case I ever took to the U.S. Supreme Court, Eric Erickson, 19-year-old boy, won $1,060,000 from Caesar's Palace, and they wouldn't pay him because he was under 21. So, and he's, by the way, his 15-year-old sister and her friend were there and being offered drinks. Now, I don't want to disparage the modern Caesar's Palace.
Sure.
But that was pretty bad. His father realized, hey, there's going to be a problem. So he tried to claim the $1 million. $1,060,000 prize, and they've got eye in the sky. So they said it's a crime in Nevada to try to claim a winnings of another person. So he said, okay, it was my son. We couldn't get him to pay because he was underage, right? So the casinos, I believe, do have the right to prevent people from claiming other people's winnings, obviously. Wow. But also, they do have the right to make their own rules and regulations about their promotions, right? So, I mean, I had a guy, a legitimate player, who had more than $50,000 in points at a casino. And they simply said, nah, we've decided we're not going to pay you. And I said, what's a breach of contract? You can't do that. And apparently, yeah, they could. So it's mainly,
do what they want, it sounds like.
Yeah. Well,
and gaming is going to probably stick up for them. And you have to find a guy like you to come in and try to fight gaming or fight law.
Right. Well, in fact, with the Eric Erickson case, up until that time, no casino had ever punished no casino had ever been punished in any way by the state of Nevada for allowing minors to gamble.
Huh.
And so one of the things I argued was it would be economically crazy for them to not exploit children because the child wins and a child is anyone now under 20, right, and 21, if the child loses, the casino keeps the money. If the child wins, they check the ID, and the casino keeps the money.
It's a free roll.
And they don't pay a penny in a fine. Things are changing a little bit, you know, and New Jersey was a lot better than Nevada. But what I think they're mainly doing is there's two separate things. One is the worry about claiming other people's winnings, which often is because the guy who's rigging the slot machine has somebody else come in to claim the winning. I mean, that's kind of what they're worried about. The other thing they're worried about is people taking advantage of their promotions.
That's big.
Yeah.
Getting the free play, and cash back. Yeah. Yep.
Right. And given how stupid some of the promotions are, they should be worried about that.
Yeah.
Sure. What do you got, John?
My last question. Is it a bad thing or something that we should be worried about if you do get audited? Does it mean you're in trouble, or does it just mean the IRS is saying, hey, we don't agree with your numbers. Try to justify this for us.
Yeah, audits go from really from very detailed to not at all. I was actually audited once. When I was practicing law in Hawaii, I took a court appointment to get some court experience. So I actually, you know, defended somebody in court. And I got paid, they'd pay very little. Whatever they paid me, I was working for a law firm. I turned it over to the law firm. The next year, the IRS called me in and said, you didn't report this. And remember, the IRS computers are good. So there was a report that I had been paid to do a court appointment to defend somebody, but I didn't report it. So I actually went to the office. I said, I'm working for a law firm. I gave it to them because it wasn't my, I don't think I could keep it. Most audits, I do know somebody who went through the whole thing. He had a guy sitting in his office for week after week going through every receipt. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about this before the show because of you asked me about cash. You can take more than $10,000 out of the country in cash, but you have to fill out the form.
Sure. Yep.
It's filling out the form that is, if you don't fill out the form, you're breaking the law.
Yep.
The reason there are all these cash rules, the CTRs, cash transaction reports, SARC, suspicious activity report casino. These are supposedly looking for terrorist money and drug dealers. When they've been used, they're used against restaurant owners who come in with large amounts of cash. And what they really care about, hey, he's not reporting his cash income. Mm-hmm. So if you have good records and you're reporting, they don't care. You know, you can go through an audit fairly easily.
Yeah.
It's the guys who get in trouble are the ones who are dealing with really large amounts of cash, right, and are simply not reporting it.
So really, if you're not shady, you don't need to worry.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Well, if you're a crook, shady, worry. You've got other worries, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Nelson, this was a lot of fun.
This was great. Thank you for staying on with us so long. I want to let people know. I want to let people know something. I've received two now. I signed up for your newsletter. I received two. They are invaluable. Yeah. They are so good.
Thank you.
GamblingInTheLaw.com. So good. It's fantastic. Your contact information's on there also, where people can get a hold of you for anything gaming related like this, and you can consult and you've been featured on so many things, ABC, New York Times. I can go on and on. But something I haven't talked about, and John, you can see here.
Yeah.
These are articles that are on his site, View More, all gambling articles that he has written. Yeah. But there's so many of them. They're so inquisitive. They're so good. They can literally, you can literally be here for hours and hours and hours on this stuff. Judge rules taking bets from black markets, no big deal. Like, there's a lot of really interesting articles here. So people can go to gamblinginthelaw.com and sign up for that and get a hold of
Nelson's
you.
Nelson's representing me once I win the main event.
Right.
This is my representation. So if you have any questions or anything, you just
this
have
was
to do
really
with Nelson.
Fun. I really appreciate your valuable time. And anytime you come to Vegas, look us up. We could put you right at the win for free. So I'll just tell you that. Which, by the way, that's the best casino. In my opinion, that's the best casino in town.
Yeah.
It's the safest. It's the most hospitable, classy, elegant. But thank you very much, Nelson. Looking forward to talk to you in the future, John and I.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you.
Anytime I can be of any help, let me know.
Oh, I will. Thank you. Thank you, Nelson.